Welcome back to the Cave of Solitude, everybody. I am your host, Eric Anthony, and you are listening to the Pop Culture and Comic Book Podcast coming to you from the megacity metropolis of Toronto. And this week, we have one more entry from my Gorilla Tape coverage of this year's Fan Expo from 2017. I hope everyone who has downloaded these recent episodes has enjoyed the coverage. I'm more than happy to share it with everybody, especially because I truly think it's entertaining and informative to those who enjoy this hobby of ours. So, with that in mind, this episode for this week, I've saved for last, not necessarily because of some sort of exclusivity or news or some major celebrity star power, but because ultimately I think it is or will be the most timely and timeless, ultimately, and informative coverage that I recorded from this year's show. So this panel that I recorded was entitled Page in a Day, and it featured the creative minds of a few of Raid Studios' shining stars in the form of writer Anthony Falcone, who's just recently been featured on the Speech Bubble podcast. I encourage you to check that out. Shout out to Aaron Broverman. And who was also joined by cartoonist Michael Cho and Marcus Toe, who you may know from books such as Joyride, Nightwing, and currently working on the Guardians of the Galaxy for Marvel. So I found this panel to be very insightful because it was a breakdown of the process of putting together a project and how to be as productive as possible. And whether you're an up-and-coming artist or writer, or whether you do any other type of vocation, the tips that were shared in this panel were valuable to all walks of life. So I was happy to have attended and was thankful to the gentlemen for sharing some of their experiences with the audience. And I think there's something in this panel we can all take away. So I'll shut up now, let you listen in, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Stay tuned to the Cave of Solitude. We have some great interviews coming at you in the very near future. Enjoy the show, everybody, and don't forget to email us at caveofsolitude@outlook.com.
Raid Studio here in Toronto. The Raid Studio is a collective of artists, writers, creators. We deal primarily in sequential art, so comic books, but we've also worked on movies, storyboarding, commercials, television, video games, graphic art, design, magazines, pretty much you name it, and we've done it. We had designed a series of talks done at Fan Expo last night. Thank you everybody who came out to our world building panel. But what we had wanted to do is talk a little about the studio, but also we'd want to talk a little about our creative process, and hear about and get questions from other aspiring artists and creators. So without sort of any more. Talking for me, I want to sort of have a little bit of intros to my friends and colleagues. Mike, introduce yourself here.
Hi, I'm Michael Cho. I'm an illustrator and cartoonist. I still use that label of cartoonist instead of comic artist. I like that label. And I occasionally give talks at universities and art colleges about productivity and time management for artists, which is serendipitous for this.
Yeah, well, I mean, we all learned from Yule in a lot of ways, so I figured it would work out well to cover for someone who...
Shall be named Ramon.
Yeah, shall be named Ramon, couldn't make it.
And Marcus, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Marcus Till. I've been doing this panel basically from the beginning that we started. I've worked on a lot of books you might know. Red Robin, Huntress, Wonder Woman, Superman... And right now I'm working on Guardians of the Galaxy with Marvel, and basically I make my chops as a monthly artist. So
the genesis of this panel came from a number of sort of different sources, but one of the things was that I was at the time writing for a website as a journalist, and I started working in the studio with all of the rest of the artists. And what I found fascinating was just how much work they do and how hard they work. Because there's a general perception out there, I think, that art is sort of easy, because if you're good at it, then it's easy to draw, and if you're not good at it, then you wouldn't have that job anyway. But really, it's actually a lot of work and a lot of long hours. The standard comic book these days is about 20 pages long. if you are a fast artist and diligent with your own productivity, you could pencil and ink a page each day, which means it would take you 20 work days to complete a comic book, which means that you could have a normal, you know, job, 9-to-5 type thing, 5 days a week, get weekends off, just like anybody else, if you were able to keep this pace. Now, artists, you know, don't get sick days, and if you decide to attend a convention like this one, it means that you need to make up time. So there are a lot of other factors in this, but we had wanted to sort of share some of the tactics that we had learned over the years to be able to build up to this type of speed. Because really, I mean, if you can produce good work at this speed, you will get work from people. Like, people will be happy to be able to hire you if you can consistently deliver at this pace. So with that, I will pass it over to the artists that have the much more difficult job.
Can I just clarify? When you say a page a day, is that a page of fully finished comic art or just pencil?
Fully finished, penciled and inked.
Oh, I've never hit that.
That's okay though. That's okay. We always have a range. And again, what I like to talk about is that, you know,
but it gives you an
every
idea.
Artist is different, and you're building up to something like that, right? And part of it is that you won't always get to control your deadlines. You rarely will get to control your deadlines. And sometimes something will happen that'll bump up your deadline, or sometimes maybe, you know, the writer is late with the script, or sometimes the printer needs to move things around and you need to get the files to the printer earlier. Like, there are all these things that can happen, and having that flexibility of being able to sort of increase your speed in different ways will prove beneficial for you in the long run. So I think a good way to start is sort of, for both of you, take us through, you know, your process. Like, what you wake up, what happens?
Well, like, daily is a little bit more difficult, but I'd like to say, like, usually weekly is a good gauge of what's kind of expected. You know, when you wake up in the morning or whenever you happen to wake up, there's a certain amount of time where you can't waste the day. It's 0 days that kill you. So you really have to get to a certain point in your life where you, and it starts when you start off, it's difficult. You have to work when you're working, and then stop when you stop. When you go to, it's like going to work 9-to-5. You go 9 a.m. You start work. Don't, you know, dick around with other things. You just jump into work, and then learning how to stop after that will save you in the long run. A lot of people talk about all-nighters. Mm. A lot of that, those destroy you because you can almost never draw or write the next day after all-nighters. The best thing you can do is separate the time. After a while, your body will, you know, get used to drawing during those, you know, hours of the day, and then get your proper rest. I mean, that's how my weekly schedule tries to go by, is about, you know, wake up around 10 a.m., which is late, pretty late, but go in the studio around 11 and then try to leave by 7 or 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. And then during those hours of working, is just work. No video games. You know, you take a break every once in a while to read a comic book, but during those times, if you can have that consistently, it really teaches you how to gauge how long it takes you to accomplish certain things.
I agree with that. And the difference is that, like, when you are working as a freelance illustrator, you are not, it's not like working for a company where you are, your goal is to fill a certain amount of hours. Your goal is actually to hit a quota, right? So if you dick around on the internet a lot or something, then it's not like that counts as work, as time that is spent at work. The page is still waiting, right? So you have to actually hit a certain quota. But further to what Marcus was saying, I find that the most important thing is planning.
Yeah.
You know, if you have, like, for example, a tight deadline, the impulse in your head is to jump right in because you don't have that much time. But if you don't spend the time planning how much time you're going to spend on, say, thumbnails, and then on the roughs, and then on the inks and such, and figuring out, like, say, if you have to gather reference, if you have to, you know, get other, like, flag parts of the script or elements, if you don't do all that lifting at the beginning and you just jump right in, you will be screwed.
Yeah.
Right?
And it stresses you out way more.
Yeah. You go into it more with more confidence if you know if you've done, like, the breakdown of what you have to do, what you need to get what you have to do done.
Yeah.
So just out of curiosity, how many people here are artists? How many are writers? You're allowed to be both things, by the way. We have any colorists here? Any letterers? Good job. a lot of times the first thing that'll happen, of course, is that you guys will get the script for a comic. It'll be given to you. For those of you who either know or don't know, but there really is no standard format for a comic book script. It isn't like a movie script where over the last 100 years they've really developed a very rigid format. Sometimes a comic book script can be really, really specific, and there'll be very detailed panel breakdowns, and you'll have an explanation of what you'll need to draw. Sometimes it'll be very loose. This was also known as the Marvel method, where basically just what happened on the page was described. It would get drawn by the artist, and then later on the writer would just fill in the words and kind of make it all work. But mostly, publishers like their writers and artists to work with more of a full script these days. Like, very rarely is something as loose as original Marvel method. So when you get the script, what do you do first in terms of getting ready for layouts and thumbnails and all that?
Well, I mean, it's like Mike said, you breaking it down. I read through the script. I do very loose layouts. It could just be stick figures, just so I know kind of the beats. The planning, the sizes of the characters in each page, the space I have, it's a lot of planning at the beginning. People sometimes talk about how artists just start drawing. I mean, that works for some people, but we're not all that special. So planning is really important, making sure that you know the space that you have to work with, because nowadays, especially if you're working with writers that tend to be a bit more verbose, you need to make sure that there's room for word balloons and everything like that. So laying out this process is very, very important. And then after that, then you can start tightening the layout so you know exactly perspective. And then the next step, I would start tightening pencils, like actually adding faces and details to things, and then inking it after. I've been working in the industry for about 13, 14 years now. And I've been a monthly guy for pretty much that whole period. After so many years, I know exactly how long I need to take for layouts. I know exactly how long I need to take for pencils. And every once in a while, there's hiccups along the way because there's stuff that you've never drawn before. Mm-hmm. But you usually allocate the time where I know I could spend more time on this page because you've already laid it out. You know the dense pages that might take you longer. And you know the quieter pages where you could cheat a little bit.
Mm-hmm. How long do you take for layouts normally?
Well, I mean,
how many days? Like, do you
yeah.
like all in one day and one shot? Do you take
I'll just
days?
Say this: if I need to do a book in 2 to 3 weeks, I could do the layouts in a day. But I don't like to do that because now you're just going with your very standard stock shots and everything that you've done before in the past. I like to take 3 or 4 days just to try to really feel the storytelling and then break down layouts. There's so many layout techniques that you can use when you see it all in front of you to your advantage, especially for if you did more longer formatting books like graphic novels where it's hundreds or more pages.
Yeah.
You really can play with that storytelling with your panels if you plan it all out.
I find that there's lots of different ways people do layouts. I've met people who could lay out a 100-page graphic novel in a week, right, or less. And it's because they're just drawing little eggs and stick figures and they're just blocking out panel shapes, right? But what I find is that in the layouts is where all the heavy lifting comes in. I do fairly detailed layouts because I actually write the words in the captions into the layouts because then I know how much space there is.
Mm-hmm.
I find that if I do all the heavy lifting in the layout stage, then the rest of it is just me coasting and doing technique and rendering, not thinking about the problems of storytelling, right? So the layout stage is where all the big thinking part comes in. And that's, do you find when you do layouts, do you listen to music? That's the one stage where I don't do anything.
I listen to classical.
Yeah, yeah, something without
words.
Right? Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
It's the one stage where I can't listen to anything else. Yeah. I'm just working in silence or something that's just instrumental.
You're really like racking your brain. It's like, how do I make this scene work? And I mean, you get examples like that if you ever see, you know, movie storyboards and stuff like that. And Pixar has one of the more famous ones where they actually show you all those storyboards that they do. And you can do that at home too. You know, you can have a board if it works for you. You can have a board and just have, you know, little doodles to make sure that all your pages are in front of you and you can see it. I mean, that's kind of your choice of what you want to do. Like, I have a little booklet of layouts that I have that I can flip through and then I can read it like a book. But everyone's different. Try to find something that works for you.
And I mean, like, a lot of artists will also have all their layouts and then, like, they'll either scan them digitally or they'll do them digitally so then they can kind of pan back.
Yeah.
They can see the entire book all at once.
Yeah.
And the benefit of that is it lets you be able to see how the flow of your issue goes. Like, you can see the beats all at once. So you have, like, you know, okay, it starts with a quiet moment, then there's a big fight, and then there's more quiet moments. And do you have the right sort of pace for the story that you're trying to tell?
Yeah, I did that. Right. I remember when I did a graphic novel that was, like, 96 pages, and I did all my layouts, and then I printed them out at, like, quarter size and stuck them on the wall to try and figure out what the size of the panels were to figure out what breathed and what didn't, and then occasionally I would take something and take a 4-page set sequence and move it here, and then move this one up there and see how it read, and then I would take the last panel in a thing and just blow it up to 2 pages.
Mm-hmm. Now, both of you ink yourself, so obviously traditionally, like, a penciler and an inker were 2 separate jobs, and as time has progressed, really the artist does really both jobs. Do you tend, because you ink yourself, you're looser with pencils? Do you tend to like going tight pencils and then...
You know that's the weird thing. It's like, if I have time, I'll do tight pencils. I tend to treat everything like as I'm 3 separate people. I'm a writer, and then I write something, and I don't think about how it'll be drawn. And then when I draw it, I curse the writer because I put in a cat that I don't know how to draw. And then when I'm the inker, then I sit there, God, I have to fix this guy's crappy drawing or something, you know? But, like, if I have a lot of time, I'll do a tight pencil, even if I'm going to ink it. At other times... like, I find that as I progress, do you find this, like, the first few pages are tight and then you get looser because you're going to ink yourself and you're in a groove.
Or your deadline's sneaking up.
Yeah,
like, well, I'll deal with this later. Future Marcus has to deal with this. But, yeah, no, for sure, if I have time, and we're talking about, like, on best-case scenario, the time that you have and what you should do to progress it. I mean, we can go on and on about, like, short deadlines, but that's not really what we're here for. We're kind of building the good habits to do the things you need to do. And, you know, when you're building those habits, yeah, tighter pencils is a little bit better for you. But some people can be way too tight, too. So it's kind of a...
At that point, print the pencils.
Yeah, just print the pencils.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, tight... When we mean tight pencils, it really means that all the anatomy is figured out, all the poses are figured out, all the textures and shadows are pretty much figured out and blocked in as well. Like, that's what I mean by tight pencils, not really like crisp lines. That's not what we're saying. We're really saying, you know, everything
all
is thought out, all the
information
is there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as a lot of artists know, you're building a lot of times when you're penciling, you know, you're building this parts of the body and faces, and you're like, you know, all the structure is already there. While sometimes if you need to speed up, you go with muscle memory more than building the structure.
So going back to what you were saying about what happens when you get a script, I find that like one of the major things that people don't understand about drawing is that there's actually a lot of writing involved in drawing, which by that I mean, like, okay, so you get a script, and then I write a little list of what I have to actually do. For example, I write down, you know, like, I'm going to have to do breakdowns, but I'm also going to have to design this character, this character, this character. I'm going to have to collect reference for this, this, and this, right? And then I'm going to have to figure out, like, in this page or in this area here, I'm going to have to do a shot that is really weird, so I'm going to have to figure out the perspective of that, right? So these are the trouble points in this thing that I'm going to have to spend extra time on. So there's a lot of, like, list-making and such. So that, because you know what it is? If you get, like, really deep into work, you forget all these little things that you were going to do later. Like, you're like, I got to remember, I got to design that character, right? And then that time comes up at midnight, and you're like, oh, now I'm going to have to design it on the board.
On the board,
yeah. And that's really bad. So I tend to have a little to-do list that I try to hit every day. and that kind of fits my MO, which is I'm a kind of guy that like plans things. So when I was younger and I had 14 hours I could work a day, I was happy to do it because I used to say I worked on passion, not on discipline. I did it for as long as I wanted to, and then I, you know, when I burned out, I stopped. And because it's art, right? You love drawing, and so you're happy to draw 14 hours a day. But then I had kids, and it was impossible to have 14 hours a day. And what I had to do was I had to learn time management, right? So I had to learn how to put 14 hours of work into 8. Yes? Well, I think planning fits into all of that. Like, for example, one of the things I do, okay, this is like the most important thing that I do every week is, I because I have kids, I try to have Saturday and Sunday off, which is almost impossible when you're starting out as a freelancer to try and get 2 days off in a week, right, where you don't do anything. And one of the ways I get that is because on Saturday, I spend 1 hour every Saturday taking care of all the paperwork that accumulated during the week, whether it was contracts, invoices, follow-up on accounting, things like that, emails that I had to write for a convention that wanted me to appear or something. I leave all of that stuff, and I don't deal with it during the week, and I leave it to the Saturday. Mm-hmm. And I deal with all of that, all the loose threads from the week before, and I close them off. I write all those emails, and then I send them off on a Monday. Right? Because if you send emails on a weekend, that's just sending a sign to people that you actually are available on a weekend, which is not a good thing. You want to let people know. I hold them until, it's like sending an email at midnight. They know you're probably writing that drunk. Right? So I save all that stuff to Monday, and then Monday morning I hit send on all that stuff, and they think that I'm total pro because I'm writing at Monday 9 a.m. following up on something that, you know, something they were supposed to send me last week. So I close off all the loose threads of the last week, and then I spend the rest of that hour planning the next week. So I write down, okay, on Monday I do this, this, and this, right? On Tuesday I do this, this, and this. And I always set it for like usually like one creative task a day, and then one like administrative office work task a day, you know, whether it was like filling out the forms for U.S. tax forms or something like that. So that when I'm done my creative task or when I'm taking a break from my creative task, I can switch and let my brain clear from creative stuff by doing something menial and office worky. Like, I used to always joke that I could do an office job, you know, when I'm not feeling creative and feeling miserable or if I'm feeling mentally fatigued because it's just paperwork, right? But creative stuff could, like, you had to be really in the zone. Like, if you're feeling like crap that day or if you had a fight with your girlfriend or something, it's really hard to get your brain to do something. Like, let's say you had a fight with your girlfriend and now you have to draw a comic strip that is all happy. Right, it's really hard to get your brain to get into that. Right, so I always thought that office work was something that was like a bit of a break from that kind of stuff. So when I'm doing creative stuff and I hit a block or I need to take a break during the day of that, I just switch to 1 hour of doing office work, and that it's like mentally wiping the block away.
And like some of what you're talking about is, you know, because you're saying, oh, like this is a hobby for you, you're just starting it, it's a side passion because you're in school or you have a day job or whatever. Lots of artists have a day job, lots of artists are in school. So you obviously won't be able to give 14 hours a day to it right now, but your end goal is actually the same as a professional artist who is putting in those hours and getting paid for it. Your end goal is to finish the thing, right? To actually finish it. And if you could, let's say that you could only dedicate a half an hour each day. So all you can dedicate each day is a half an hour of drawing. But if you draw for a half an hour each day, eventually you will finish that thing. And at the end of all of that, you will have a finished thing that you're happy and proud about because you finished the whole thing. and then you'll get to move on to the next thing, which will be better.
Yeah, and also, when you write your to-do list, like if you are just have only a certain amount of time and you're a hobbyist and you write, like, say something like, your to-do list says, you know, today go to school and then at evening make my graphic novel. That is not a to-do list you're going to ever accomplish.
No.
You have to break that,
break
it down and say, to-do list, right? Outline the plot.
Yeah, or like, I'm drawing just that one panel today, and I'll dedicate my time to the one panel. And having those small goals will make a huge difference, because even in your career, when you get to a point in comics, like, it's very difficult. It's hard to stay on top of things. It's hard to, like, keep a schedule for your entire life. Hey, it's even hard to, you know, deal with either good or bad editors or people on Twitter or whatever the case might be. But, you know, every time that you accomplish those little tasks, it will add up to more.
Yeah.
And you're right. Like, if you make really nebulous goals, like, you know, I
draw my comic.
Yeah, or I will work out today. Yeah. It's not going to happen. You're like, I had to dedicate between 4 and 5. This is the hour, and this is the only time I have to do to draw, to work out, to whatever. And you just have to sit there and make sure you stick to it. Just stick to it like you stick.
Set a realistic goal.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah, stick to it like you would stick to watching Game of Thrones. You know, I'm gonna be sitting in my front of the TV at this time to watch this show.
Yeah,
take that same amount of dedication into your art.
Everybody at New Year's, like, you know, for the resolutions, they write, like, you know, write my novel. Right, and it's like when you see that on your list of things, you always skip it for the one that says, you know, go out with your friends or, you know, take out the garbage, because write my novel isn't, you haven't thought it through. So you have to break that down into, you know, to manageable steps. And if instead of writing write my novel, you write something like, you know, like, think about 5 ideas for my novel.
Yeah.
Right, and then once, you know, pick the best idea from that is the next step. And then from that, it's like, okay, create characters for my novel, right? Those are actionable steps that you are willing to do. Whereas something gigantic that is nebulous in your head, you will never want to approach that.
It's too big.
Even if it's a page, instead of saying, you know, like, draw that page, break it down to smaller steps. You know, figure out how many panels are on that page. Figure out where the balloons go on that page, and so forth.
And that's your task for that, you know, whatever,
that's
half an hour, if that's what you need to do, right? Yeah.
What do you guys think about traditional versus digital in terms of time saving and or not really time saving?
Well, I've just, you know, really entered the realm of digital after drawing traditionally, pencil and inking traditionally for like 10, 12 years. It took a little while to get used to it, but I found it quite a bit faster, but it's not faster because of the program. It's just faster because I can put ideas down and not be married to these ideas, or it's easier to fix the problems with, you know, your drawings than traditionally. But I still think that, especially when you're starting out, volume is key, and you working out your kinks and forcing yourself to erase and redraw is actually way more better for you learning wise than having the ability to just shrink ahead when you. But that's my opinion.
I'm kind of different than that. I'm faster traditionally.
Really?
Because I can't undo.
Oh.
Right? Like, I put down an ink mark
I
have to stick with that. So there's a little bit more concentration that comes. But I do enjoy working digitally. I do like half my stuff digitally, if not more. Only because of the fact when I'm mentally fatigued, I do not want to have to sit there while I'm trying to ink and like a really tight curve and not be able to undo that. If I'm tired and it's the end of the night, I would much rather be drawing digitally, because then I can blow it up.
Yeah.
I can undo it. You know, I can resize a head that I drew that was wrong size and so forth. And digital gives you that option, right? But otherwise, whenever I sit there and I draw something on paper, actually, and especially when I ink on paper, I always find it's faster.
That's true.
It's done.
You can't do anything about it.
Yeah, you just have to keep moving forward because, you know, you're going to put out the whiteout later.
Yeah. It is important to know both, because, I mean, knowing that, you know, the confidence of laying down a line that you cannot fix.
Yeah.
Sometimes a good amount of times you learn so much from that because it's like letting go.
Yeah.
And but also the ability to just that I wasn't expecting it to look like that. Mm-hmm. Let's see if I can make what I just did there still look good.
Yeah.
You know?
You put down the first line in ink and you botch it and you want to rip up the paper, right? Because it's the only ink line on the page and it's a mistake.
Yeah.
You put down 40,000 lines around that thing, that line disappears.
Yeah.
So you just keep moving, you know?
Yeah.
But with digital, you just redraw that curve over and over again.
Yeah, that's true. You're like, nope.
I've done that. Control Z.
And you're like, I gotta stop this.
Just commit. Just commit. Yeah.
When you're doing like a big panel of like something that's like 90 pages, how do you organize that so you don't like lose track of where you are or like where the story's going?
You have a script.
No, I mean like with the actual papers.
Oh well, that's organization, really. I mean, there's a couple things you can do. I know some of the guys in the studio, we have templates that we print on the paper that have, you know, your page numbers and everything, and then it'll be just right on the page what the page number is. You know, if you ever seen like Marvel and DC paper, it's kind of like that too, where they have, you know, the blue line and all the print whatever they're called, but they also has, you know, titles, artists, paper. I mean, the only person I know that doesn't do that is Scott Hepburn. Scott Hepburn at our studio, he just writes... He doesn't even write the title on it. He just writes numbers. I'm like, I don't know how you...
Scott's a bit of a lunatic.
He's a lunatic. But yeah, that goes with organizing. What I've done is I've also had different shelves for different projects and even chapters. You buy one of those, anything from Office Depot or whatever like that, and you just slide in. Here's the scene one, scene two, scene three. You can do that as well. Or you can have a big clipboard and you just clip scenes in there. But numbering and labeling all your pages, whether it's on the back or on the top, is really important.
But you've also got a stack of layouts that are like your comic in miniature, right? So that you know what...
Yeah.
If you see that page, you know what goes on that page and what's going to be drawn.
Yeah, and that's what the layouts are for, too. Because you almost have, like, a cheat sheet with the layouts because you can see it in a small version already in case you lose it.
So you guys talked earlier about, you know, not listening to music at certain stages or just listen to classical. What else do you sort of do as kind of, I guess, inspiration or just background, noise while you're working?
If I'm not inspired, I look at artists that inspire me. And so if I'm just not jazzed that day, I look at an artist whose work just knocks me out, and then that gets me wanting to draw. Of course, if you look at really good artists, it'll make you not want to draw because you will never be as good as them, and then you'll want to give up. But if there's, you know, the people that made you love comics are the people you're going to look at. You're going to turn back to them when you're not feeling comics, right? And then other than that, I listen to the kind of music that suits the kind of work that you're doing. Right?
Yeah,
that's the one thing.
Everything Mike said, but also like sometimes my personal experience with my own issues is a lot of times I get really impatient with myself. And sometimes the only way to get beyond these blocks is literally to draw that stupid head 20 times if needed, just to finish that thought, to get it out of your head, because you know when you're struggling with, you know, a pose or a face or whatever, that's the time when, you know, you could probably hit if you stick to it, you just cause you get your most learning done, because there's something going on in your head that you're trying to figure out, and that's trying to figure it out. And sometimes you just have to sit there, and maybe you only do that one thing for that day, but sometimes those are really important to get beyond it and keep drawing till at least it might not be perfect, but it's satisfactory and you get through it. You got to work through those humps.
Can I ask, is that when you're searching for a pose, like for a figure,
not
or when
searching.
You're like you can't render the pose that's in your head?
Yeah.
Like, it's an angle that you're just going, I can see it, but it doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a little bit of both. I mean, most of the time when I'm struggling with that, it's just kind of like for some reason I'm not drawing the eye properly or whatever. And it's really, really dumb, but what just the problem was when I was younger, I would just like, it would frustrate me so much, I'd walk away and I won't touch it for a long time.
That's weird, because I do the opposite. Like, if I've redrawn the same face like 6 times because everything is wonky, right, I will stop that and move to the next thing, and then go back to that when the palette's cleansed or something.
Yeah, every once in a while I'll try to do that as well, but because
I'll just end up grooving into that paper and it'll just tear it up.
I also have problems with letting go, so we all have our issues, and you got to find a way around your own problems, right? And that's kind of what experience and also what we're talking about. When you build a schedule and you know that you can dedicate X amount of hours a day, you're already getting into your body in the mode of doing those things during those time periods of the day. So so it's just going through the struggles, but you just got to sit there and do it.
You got a question over here?
And moving into trying to do things digitally, if you're just used to drawing with the pen and paper, what is there something that makes it easier to make that switch over?
You should try to draw with a Cintiq or something close to that experience, right? So that like some people draw with those.
Nimit draws with. Nimit
paints
with the bamboo tablet.
That's
crazy.
I've seen other people do that. You know how there's some tablets where you look at the screen and you move your hand here. I could never do that. I know some people who can brilliant illustrators who can look here and move their hand here, and I have to look at the tip of my pencil. So I use a Cintiq where you draw. Or you could use an iPad. You can use the Surface does a similar type of thing, where what you see in front of you as you're drawing is touched by the stylus. Right?
I'll say this too. All that digital stuff is a tool. So you might just have to change the way you normally draw, because like even if you start drawing with a pencil and then drawing with a pen or a brush, you can't. Draw the same way with a brush as with a pencil.
No.
So you have to like change the way you lay down the line, right? So like a pencil, you can have your elbow down and draw, but if you're using a brush, you have to swing your arms and stuff. And that's changing the tool. So digital is a tool. Try to not worry too much about. It's like, how can I make this still look good with the tool that I have, as opposed to, I want to make this look like a pencil drawing, right? And that's study. That's kind of a study thing. Like, if you use, it's like when you paint, you know, you're not going to paint the same way with watercolor as with acrylics. It's just something different,
every tool has its advantages and limitations, and there is no perfect tool that does everything, right? So a lot of people assume that because it's digital and you can mimic the look of oil paints, or you can mimic the look of pencil or ink, that it's the perfect tool, because it also comes with undo. But actually, digital has its limitations as well, and you have to accept that. Like, for example, I find the glass surface really annoying.
It's glossy.
The pencil's always, it always feels like I'm drawing on glass, which is akin to, like, you know, nails on chalkboard to me. and then the other thing is there's no impersonal, accidental effects.
Yeah.
Everything is predictable in digital, right? So you can't get the accidental ink mark that you would get out of using a brush and that you decide to keep because it adds a cool texture to it. Everything in digital is immediately predictable, so...
I'd say a good way too is just to play around with, like I said, just different tools all the way through. So, like, you know, maybe try acrylics on your work, and then it'll force your brain to think differently from what you normally do. And I'm a firm believer in that in general, because I mean, like, you look at a lot of artists, who stay with one tool. It gets boring for your viewers, but also it gets boring for yourself, as an artist, to try, and then you'll always be searching for this thing to try to mimic, the look that you're trying to get, when you can still do something amazingly new with the tool that you have in front of you. So.
And further to that, when you're using digital tools, it doesn't mean that you have to actually use them as like digital equivalents to analog stuff. Like, there's people I used to draw, for example, when I would draw pencils, using a digital version of a pencil.
Yeah.
And I realized, why am I doing this? Why don't I just use a marker, digital marker tool, because then it's blockier and it leaves out a lot of the detail and it closer approximates the look of ink. The only reason I don't do that on paper is because I can't erase it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's true.
But I can do that digitally, so I can do a pencil draw, what I would consider the underdrawing, you know, in a marker digitally, and then use that to my advantage.
Actually, that exact same incident happened to me, because when I started digitally, I was using Photoshop at first, and I'd be using the pencil tool and then ink tool over top of it. But when I started using Clip Studio, and the pencil tool just was not, like, it wasn't looking right.
Pencil-y, right?
I asked Ramona, I was like, what do you use? He's like, I just use G-Pen for everything. Layouts, everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, this is perfect. Because it's you would never pencil with a nib. Because that's what it is. Because
you can't erase it.
Basically, because you can't erase it, plus a nib, you have to like draw very specific. Like, you have to be very confident to where the angles are going to go. Because it'll cut up your paper in real life. But digitally, it doesn't matter. You're not cutting up anything.
Yeah.
So... I was just using the G-Pen, just a pencil, because the way it feels, you just have to think kind of outside of what you normally do. You can even pencil with a brush on digitally. It's just whatever works.
I've seen people now who ink using a pencil tool.
Yeah,
digitally. And I think that's awesome, you know?
Nimit, our studio mate, he uses this, it was a pastel brush to ink. Because it gives a little bit more texture, and then he can get some nice... and he makes it look like black pencil. It's crazy. So,
let's go to more questions.
Going back to what you're talking about, motivation, and actually at the very beginning, when you mentioned zero day, and that how starting the day is critical. For me, I find that those first 20 minutes are critical. Mm. And if something happens, like a client phone call or something like that, that can send you down a rabbit hole, you end up in that zero day situation. How do you get out of that? Do you have any sort of a ritual?
You know what you should do? If I can go first on this.
Yeah, go for it.
Ignore any outside stuff for the first hour. If a phone call comes, unless you give yourself an hour, right? Unless it's a hardcore emergency where they're going to call 20 times, you know that it's not an important call. It can go to voicemail and you can pick it up in an hour. If an email, if you hear the ding of the email, you know, ignore them for the first hour, right? And the similar thing with any kind of notifications from Twitter or Facebook or Instagram. I don't care if you got 4 more followers. You're going to find that in an hour. It's cool. You can do that, you know? Similar to that, what I do is... I give myself, because let's face it, we all need those distractions, okay? Like, I want to check Twitter too, okay? But what I do is I set times for it. So I go the first hour, I don't do anything else but work, right? And then I take 20 minutes to do the heavy Facebook and Twitter crap, right? And then I go back for another hour, and then I take 10 minutes after that. You know, so whatever works for you, but set times, understand yourself, know yourself, and know that I need a video game break. Cool. I'm going to give myself a video game break at 4:00. Okay. But until then, I don't do that.
Yeah. And I break it up. I break up my times with when I complete like a panel. It might not be an hour.
It's a reward.
It's a reward because I'm like, I finished this task that I did and I'll mess around on Facebook or whatever like that. But it's tough, like, ignoring outside sources, but sometimes you kind of have to just ignore it for them.
And I mean, that, like, using rewards is really good, like, whether you're writing or drawing or whatever, but your reward system cannot be keyed to time in the chair. It has to be keyed to what you've actually completed, right? Because if you sat in that chair for 8 hours... Like you might just need to sit there long enough to like fight through some extra things, right? But if your goal was a panel, if your goal was a page of script or whatever, finish that thing first, because then you finished a thing no matter what, right? Like, again, one that we talk about in the studio a lot is the zero day kills you, right? And you have too many zero days in a row, and you get into like a shame spiral, and you hate your life, and you just feel like garbage, but... Essentially, you always can restart, right? Like, it doesn't matter that you had like 3 0 days just passed. Today will not be a zero day, and you just try to not break the chain, right? And anything you get done, anything, one panel, one sentence, one, like, you know, head inked, is still more than you had yesterday, and it's not, suddenly not a zero day. Yep.
In regards to inspiration, and you're working on a specific project, how helpful is it to immerse yourself into that sort of subject matter, or does it detract a little bit if you're too involved in, let's say you're drawing Thor, to go back and look at all of that material? How much of it is helpful and how much of it is a distraction?
How much research do you guys do?
Yeah,
I don't do any, but I only do it on the page, but mostly just because I have, I'm on a monthly schedule, right? Every issue is 4 to 5 weeks. So I could dedicate some time for reference. And I do, but only on the scenes that I know that I'm going to have trouble with. So I'll look for reference. Or even when I'm working on a panel, I might not know that pose, so I look for some poses. But going back to the reference material of, say, Thor, I don't necessarily need to know that. I don't think I need to immerse myself that in depth, because as a writer, it is probably different, because knowing the subject matter is more important as a writer, right? But as an artist, I don't feel I really need to know that as much, but only because, like I said, I'm on a monthly schedule and the book needs to get done in 4 weeks, and I can't do that.
Yeah, I think it's a time thing. Like, I mostly do covers these days, so I actually do a lot of research and reference. So if I'm coming up with something, I go into it. The more research I do, the more confident I have when I sit down to actually draw something, right? So if I'm doing a bunch of covers and they're supposed to be like boxing posters or something, I've looked at a lot of them. I've internalized what major elements are.
Yeah,
you know, so that I'm not feeling my way out of the page. I've already got all that in my head.
But that's something you have to like control of yourself as well, because that's a rabbit hole you can totally slide down. You can be like,
you've got to budget that time.
Yeah, you got to budget that time, because you can very easily go a whole day of just looking at like videos and comic books and stuff.
Yeah,
just,
I think all of this is contingent on how much self-discipline you have, and that should be obvious. So.
Yeah. Like, because again, you know, research and planning are key, but you're not being paid for that, or that's not the end goal, even if you're doing it as a passion project, right? Like, your end goal is not looking up boxing posters. Your end goal was to do a bunch of covers that evoked classic boxing posters, right? So that's why eventually you have to be able to jump away from the research and the planning into the doing the thing. At the back? Yep, you? Do you guys work at the same time every day?
Yeah.
Okay. So the reason why school is structured the way that it is, like when we're kids, you math at a certain time of day. That way your brain is ready to learn math, right? You have gym at a different time of day. That way your body is ready to do gym. And when you work on this kind of stuff, right? Like, so for you, is there like different times of day where there'll be different times, like types of work?
Oh, yeah. The start of the day is really light stuff because my brain is still waking up from coffee, and then after lunch is when the real creative stuff hits, right? And after a few years, your body is used to that rhythm, so after lunch, I'm sitting there going, I'm ready. I've warmed up the day doing the lighter stuff, and now I'm ready to hit the really complex part of the creative task. So, you know, and then at the end when I'm wiped is when I'm doing the cleaning up, you know.
Mine's a little bit broken up into two sections. I'm pretty good in the morning. My mood's not good in the morning, but like drawing-wise, I'm pretty good in the morning because I've gotten so used to literally just waking up, sitting down, just starting to draw. But around like 6 or 7 is when I'm like, oh man, I can't do this.
Yeah.
So I have to take, I go eat dinner, I go out, maybe have a drink. I've even been known to, you know, go out for 3 or 4 drinks and then go back home and draw at like 10, 11 p.m. Because that's another like part where I just like sitting there. I don't like going to bed early, but I like sitting there and I like the calmness of the night. But I do know that I cannot base my whole life around drawing at night.
No.
It's the worst thing you can do.
Yeah.
So I've forced myself to switch into a more of a daytime thing. But yeah, I mean, anytime morning, I'm really good. But that's the thing. You get, after, it just takes months of just doing it. But I can literally just go into the studio right when I walk into the, and sit down and then just start drawing a page. Especially if the layouts are done.
Yeah.
If the layouts are done, that's the easiest thing to start and just draw.
Yeah.
The layout part, again, this is all about planning. I already know what's going to be on this page, kind of. So I can just sit there and start working things out instead of really taking my brain and thinking. Layouts is after lunch thing. Because you need to eat, you know, once everything's like settle down, you eat layouts afternoon. That's where I
working at night though is a real tricky one because it's really seductive. Like when you're younger, it's because there's no distractions, right? You're not going to get the call. You don't have to go to the bank. You don't have to get groceries, you know. So and everybody else is asleep, so the time just opens up, right? And I used to love working at night. I would start to work at like 10 o'clock for a second shift, and then go till 4 a.m. and like it was nothing, and it would just. You know, everybody else is asleep, so the time just disappears, and you're just lost in your head working. But the problem with it is that it's a really destructive system after a while. You can do it for a few years, but if you continue that on past your 30s and stuff like that, it takes a toll on
your
really body, you know? And then you're waking up at, like, 2 p.m. in the afternoon, you know? I've done that many times, and it's like you're in a cycle where you're waking up progressively later every day, and in winter...
It just hurts.
Yeah, and in winter, you're sitting there going, I got 1 hour of daylight after I wake up before I'm back, and you're just in a night cycle all the time. And then you find that at night when your friends want to go out because their work is done, you can't because that's when you're actually starting work.
Yeah.
I'm amazed that you can draw after a few drinks because if I have one drink, I will not draw.
It depends.
That's
Kerry,
what we want to do.
Kerry Nord is the king of drinking and drawing.
Wow.
That guy can drink. I saw him draw pages at a pub drinking pints of beer, and that was his like workspace.
Wow.
Yeah.
I could do like other substances and draw like a maniac, but I could never do alcohol.
We don't condone or endorse either of those.
Secretly, he does.
Yeah. You have a studio, so you work through there, but what would you recommend for people that don't? So I think that in general, and this is just sort of a generalization, you need your own space that works for you, right? So if you don't have your own space in your house, and you can work in a coffee shop, you can work in a pub, you can work whatever, but you need some place which is your own, hopefully a place that you can, again, go to the same time every single day. But like in terms of like probably both of their spaces and definitely their spaces will look different than mine, but all of our creative spaces will look different because that's a very personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, what do you guys have in your creative spaces that sort of help you?
I have a studio and it's the entire downstairs of my house. And one of the things there's a couple of things. One of the rules I have is there has to be a space for everything. Every item has to have a place, right? Like that it goes. So I have a place for my T-square, I have a place for my triangles, I have a drawer where I keep my circle templates, and it's labeled circle templates, because if I'm stupid, then I'm in my head, I'm going to be going through every drawer trying to find this one, right? And the other thing that's important for me is, at the end of the night, there's nothing on my drawing table. Like, I take everything off my drawing table and I put it in a drawer, and I have a cabinet that has four bins, and there's four projects I could be working on currently, and anything more than that will not fit in the bin, so therefore I will not take anymore. But whatever is on the drawing table, at the end of the night, I put it away so that if I'm in that studio, I am not seeing that thing, and it's making me not relax because I drew that head crappily and I want to fix it right now or something. So when I'm done work, it is put away. Right, and that way the remaining time of the day is you completely recharging. You are not carrying some element of the day. That's just the way I work, though.
I've done both where I've had my paper that I've been working on and then I can't get over it. But that also has helped me because when I wake up and I see it, I'm like, I got to get on that thing. But that's also a cool thing about digital is that you turn off the computer. It's almost like a weird...
I never turn off my computer.
I turn off my computer every night. What are you talking about?
I just put it to sleep.
No, man. You got to turn it off. Man, it's like a psychological thing. You turned off the computer, so you turned off work, right? It's a funny psychological thing.
It takes longer to reboot, then.
No,
you have to wait that minute while
it's... That's why you You change your startup programs, man. You eliminated all your startup programs.
Marcus, I'm going to do that. I've learned something today. Thank you.
Startup programs and clear your desktop.
Panel is a success, yeah. No matter what now.
Yeah. Clear, make sure your desktop doesn't have a lot of files on it.
Oh, no, my desktop has nothing on it.
Yeah.
It has just the two hard drive icons. I even have a folder called desktop crap, put it here, and I just dump it there and I clear it out once a month or something.
Now, some of like what you're hearing is sort of personality type stuff. Like either you have sort of like a Dexter level meticulousness, right, to your workspace. But a lot of our colleagues are super, super messy, like insanely
yes.
messy. It actually does affect productivity, right? And I would say this to anybody who thinks that they're productive in a whirlwind tornado of nonsense and mess, you should not have a messy space. Like
your brain
the
workspace is an extension of your brain. If it's messy, your brain is messy, and you're carrying a lot of stuff. Simplify it down into the stuff that you need, and then you'll work better. I'm a super messy guy. Okay, it's just that the end product is very clean and the stuff around it is messy, but at the end of the night, I just put stuff away.
Yeah. Sure. Any other questions? Anyone else? Yep.
How do you guys balance time between, you know, personal projects and
time equals money to me, so I have to make sure that I have to have the money to buy the time to do the personal stuff. You know what I mean? So, I used to joke around that you could do shitty comics, okay, for a publisher that is going to pay you a terrible rate, okay. Try to break into comics and draw something you don't want to draw, okay, and you can make $25 a page. And do that for 10 years, trying to get up in the industry, right? You will be working like a dog for 10 years on comics you don't like for a publisher who makes a product that is vastly inferior while you are trying to go up the industry. Or to me, I thought the better way was, well, I'm going to do illustration work and spend 3 weeks out of the month doing illustration work, getting paid much more than that $25 page rate, and then buy myself the extra week, that last week of the month, to draw comics that I want to make. And if I draw something that I want to make, and I can put my love into it, and therefore I will improve better. And if I love this, then somebody else will love it too, right? So that was my thinking in the way of balancing work and personal projects.
I've struggled with this myself a lot, and we just did a rate anthology as a studio, and that was kind of one of those kind of situations where, you know, I'm not going to pay for it. I'm doing this out of, you know, the stories that we want to start to tell, and dedicating time is the only really way to do it. It's almost like I'm dedicating, like Mike said, either I'm dedicating this week only to my own thing, and you just have to be okay with that, and you balance your own budget accordingly, so you don't work that week and just work on that. Or, you know, you do the every Monday, that's my day to work on your stuff. It's very hard to I've had a very difficult time sticking to those words, because, you know, like Mike said, money is money too, right? Like you gotta live, but like that's the only way to do it. And if you can get to that point of dedicating the time, that's the only way. There's no other trick, really, I don't think.
And it's about self-knowledge, right? Like, there are some people who can do one day a week on their personal project. There's other people that need, like, a couple of days to warm into it, and then a couple of days to get going on that. So then, for those people, they may just want to do, like, a 1 week a month. And there's other people who are like, no, you know what? I worked 6 months out of the year so that I could spend 4 months just doing this,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, a lot of people
and
done that.
It's all dependent on how your brain works and how, you know, how you're able to do those kinds of things.
And maybe it's also that, you know, like, if you're getting paid for a project, then you work on that for 7 hours a day, and you work 1 hour a day on your own personal thing, right? So it won't, obviously, you won't finish your own personal thing as fast as the other thing, but at least you'll know when it will be done. And again, continuous dedication to it means that it will be done eventually.
Also, it could be something you're looking forward to, too, you know? Like, it's almost like a reward in itself that, like, oh, man, I worked on this project that I hate for X amount of days. You know, I can't wait till Monday comes so that I can start jumping on my own stuff. Because it's like, you start building anticipation for yourself because you get excited about the own, your own work that you're creating as well.
Yeah, to get another question there.
Yeah. So after taking a long break and being down and unmotivated, you know, how do you really, you know, get a hold of, you know, this is what I want to do, this is how I get back focused, and, you know.
What do you classify as a long break?
So, as a hobby, you know, you go from drawing every day or every week to, you know, now I'm depressed and mopey and it's been a couple of months or something like that, and now I'm like, okay, I'm ready again to start, you know, pursuing what I want to do, and,
I'd say that's quite tough because a lot of that comes from, you know, your own personal, you know, ups and downs of your life. One of the things that, so my girlfriend suffered from some severe depression. She had concussion issues and stuff like that, and she was laid off from work. Some of the advice that I gave her that I really think helped was kind of, you know, give yourself a bit of a project. Small goals will help you get over the hump. Where I even told her, she was out of work for like a year. I said, you know, what do you want to learn? Maybe what do you want to take class for? She said, I want to do quilting. I said, well, that's a good idea because it's constructive, it's short term, and it's just something small and a project that you can complete. And it's a physical project, so once it's done, even if there's mistakes everywhere, it's done and you can see it. And there's something beautiful about art, I think, is that a lot of people have bad job satisfaction because you never really see completion. You're kind of part of a cog that, you know, you just pass on the next thing to the next person. But art and creativity, you can see what you've done in front of you. And sometimes just taking yourself and giving yourself a little bit smaller goals and smaller projects just to reinvigorate yourself, to feel confident in yourself, to do the things that you want to do is important. Because, you know, giving yourself too big of goals is very daunting, and I felt like that has helped.
And I mean, like especially so, like I assume that in some ways when you're talking about things like that, say you're working on a personal project, right? So say you have a comic you want to do, and you've worked on it for you know, every day, and then just stuff happens, and then it's been months and months and months, and you haven't gone back to it yet, right? So what's hard about starting is that in your head you're thinking, oh, I got this whole comic to do, and I haven't done it forever, and I've failed at this. But your job isn't to draw the whole comic in one day. Your job is to draw something one day, to do one little thing, one panel, one character, one tiny little sketch, and then to do the same thing the next day, and the same thing the day after that, and the same day after that. And that's how you get back into that groove. Because like all of us have had times when we've had longer periods of 0 days than we would ever want, right? Like it does happen.
That's called vacation.
Yeah, well, yeah.
That's called death.
But you just don't want it to have it go too long, right? Time for one more question, I think.
Mm-hmm. When you construct your panels, do you use light tables? Do you like draw like perspective backgrounds, architecture, throw it in?
Some people do.
Do you lightbox your layouts?
I don't.
I do.
But I've seen like a bunch of people do different things. I mean, really, that's kind of a personal question of whether or not, how confident are you, or even the process that you want to build. I mean, and you can always adjust it if you felt like you needed to cut time as well. Like, no, you don't. I wouldn't say do you lightbox every thing.
No. I mean, I'll take the layout, which is, you know, a rough thing, and then I'll blow it up to the size with the page or something, and then I'll stick the board on, and then occasionally I'll shift stuff or I'll redraw the whole thing. But the basic construction is lightbox.
Wow. Yeah, I've never done that.
Wow, so you actually just look at your thing and then
draw it?
See, I sit there and I go, then I would have to draw the perspective grid, and I'd draw the figure. Let's say there was four figures on
they
on
had to
one
redraw
page,
the four figures?
And I'd go like, oh, that one's actually too small, or it should have been rotated this way or
then
something.
Then I erase it and do it again.
See, I lightbox that one, because
that's
where the construction's already on the
layout.
Yeah,
true. But that's also sometimes where I do believe it has helped me get faster, because it's like, man, I have to make a decision right now to erase this thing and redraw it, and then you, so that has helped me to not procrastinate, because it's just like, okay, I have to do this. That's it. erase it and redraw it and redraw it, and you get faster because you've drawn this this thing
that's true.
50 times.
You're slow at the beginning, but your skill has improved so much from redrawing
from
that.
Redrawing that. So I guess it depends on what you're trying to do. Are you more, do you want to learn or do you want to, well, I mean, I wouldn't say, that's not really nice to say, I guess. It's not that you're not willing to learn if you're doing it the other way, but...
A lot of this is just tools, and personally, you guys will figure out which tools work for you better or not. Thank you all so much for coming. We hope that you guys learned a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
We are here for the entirety of Fan Expo. Come visit us down in P201 to P208.